All right, here we go. Officially into the month of July, and sports is officially in the air. It feels like we're getting there. I think we are. Overdrive, off and running, TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker and up on TSN 4, Brian Hayes and Dave Festrek from the Toronto Star. Does sports feel like it's in the air for you, Dave? Are you in studio again? Okay. Can't hear Dave. So I think it's Steve who's back there on the board. If you can fire Dave up, that would be appreciated. I'm assuming I'm still on the air. I know my power went out last week, and at that point, I figured I was leaving Mike Johnson in kind of a Garth Algar type of situation. And as karma plays out right now, I am officially going Garth. But yeah, we've got sports, I think. I mean, it sounds that way anyway. Bob McKenzie's been reporting. I swear Bob is like in the room or on these calls with the NHL and the NHLPA. But Bob has been reporting that we're getting close, and it feels like it's just a matter of time before something is put forth in front of the players and in front of the Board of Governors. And once they lock it in, it's all good. And I guess we'll return to play. And it sounds like it's going to be in Toronto, and it's going to be in Edmonton. And I think we've been bracing for that the past few days. I think Canadians are a little bit conflicted in terms of how you're feeling, how your mental state, you know, stands or where it stands in terms of COVID, and whether or not you want 12 teams embarking on your town if you're in Toronto or if in Edmonton. I guess the province would have to factor in on that as well in Ontario and in Alberta. But I think the plan is going to work. You know, I think the plan is going to work. I think the testing will be there. I think before the players even get there or get here, they're going to be tested and they're going to be ready to perform. And I think it's going to be on the players to make sure that they stay within the bubble. And once they start playing and they find some normalcy and they get on the ice, I think it'll be all good. And I'm looking forward to it. And it's been a long run without sports. I heard that. Is that you, Dave? Someone's knocking on the mic. Yeah, this is... Okay, is Dave on the line or? Okay, so Dave Festrek, I believe, is moving to a different mic. I know this is terrible radio and TV, but this is what happens when I'm at home and Dave is in the studio and Mullen is not there. So we'll get Dave Festrek on here in just a moment.
Is this thing on?
Yeah, there you go, Dave.
There we go.
This is so awkward for me because I'm just staring at the same wall I've been staring at for 4 months. So I don't know if you're there. I don't know if you're not there. I have no feedback. I'm relying on the tech people in the building to make sure that you're up and running, but I guess you're back now.
Well, it's good to get a little glimpse behind the curtain of the Hayes estate because you got the palatial office there. Are you telling me that you were looking at a wall as you broadcast?
Yeah, so I'm down in the office, so to speak, that was a storage room for the first 4.5 years we owned the house. We didn't do anything down here. My wife's got all her, you know, her diplomas and her degrees and her class pictures up there. I have nothing. I basically was told right when we moved in, this is not your place of business. This is where I will be operating. Yeah, my wife never does anything down here. She doesn't work from home. So okay. We've just kind of used it as a storage room for about 4.5 years. And then when COVID hit and we found out we're going to be at home, I did the first probably 2 weeks of shows upstairs. And I was doing them in our dining room. And then the kids started to decide that they wanted to be a part of the show as well.
Ah.
And it became abundantly clear that things had to change. So I moved downstairs. And ever since then, we've been down here. And I'm looking at the wall, and I'm looking at a tripod, and I'm looking at an iPhone 11, I believe it is. And okay. I've been doing that for 3.5 months. So I can hear Steve, like our board op, but if he's trying to get you figured out, I can't be talking to him. I can't be looking at him. So that was one for the ages to open the show. That was not overly smooth. And I joked. I said, I've put other guys in bad positions before when my mic is dropped or my power's gone out. It went out on Tuesday, right? Like Mike Johnson was in here, and around 5:25, I had a power outage in my house, and
whole
everything
house.
Dropped.
Everything
whole house.
Got. Wow.
Everything went dark, and it started powering up immediately, but I was gone. I had lost my connection. So MJ was at home, and Johnny was just sitting there. He didn't know what was going on. He didn't know why I wasn't talking anymore. And the same thing just happened to me. So I guess karma is a you-know-what. And now I got to stop goofing on people for acting like Garth Algar in Wayne's World when Wayne storms off the set, because every once in a while it can turn around on you.
Yes, indeed.
And it just did. But anyway, I was saying, sports appears to be in the air now that we're into July. It feels like it's getting closer. With the NHL nearing some sort of a conclusion, we think it'll get there. We think it'll cross the finish line. And then they'll be in Toronto and in Edmonton. And baseball, they're supposed to be in camp as of tomorrow, and games starting in just a couple of weeks. And the Raptors have been down in Florida for about 4 days now.
Wow.
So I guess it's go time here.
The scary thing is, Hayes, there's something else in the air in Florida. And it's record COVID in the air in Florida, right? So you got to wonder, if you're Adam Silver, like, there's not many times in your career as NBA commissioner that you're going to say, geez, Bettman outsmarted me on this one. But you're saying to yourself, Bettman outsmarted us on this one. What the hell are we doing in Florida? And they're getting to go up in Canada where there's almost no COVID, relatively. Not that we've conquered the beast by any measure. But Florida, you know, just reported 10,000 new cases today. Hayes, that's a record, a daily record.
Yeah, and I've come to that expectation almost every day. I'm just assuming that the numbers are going to continue to be at that level because they've been breaking records almost every day.
Yeah.
And, that's definitely a concern. I mean, clearly the wheels were in motion months ago. And months ago, Florida was not hit as badly as New York, other places that I guess were potentially an option. And they also opened early, which should have been the sign that this could go south on us.
Yes.
The fact that Florida opened up and allowed, you know, WrestleMania to be considered an essential service, and sporting events like the UFC being fought in Jacksonville before anything else was up and running, maybe should have been a signal of what was coming. So I guess, you know, to be fair to the NBA, you're talking about a juggernaut here.
Yes.
And to pump the brakes on it, it's impossible now.
No, they're right? Locked
like
in.
The cat is out of the bag. It's over. Like, they're going to Orlando. But I will say, I don't have as much anxiety or concern. It might be easy for me to say I'm up in Toronto. I'm in my basement. I'm not going out into the world, and I'm not in Florida, and I'm not going into a bubble. But I do think once they get in there, if it's not there, if it's not hovering around Disney, which is a massive compound, massive. They're not on some guy's farm.
No.
You know, or staying in a hotel on King Street. Like, it is a massive compound where if they get in and they're clean, I think they'll be okay. Like, if there's the safest place in Florida will be in that bubble. It'll absolutely be the safest
potentially
place to be.
But, you know, the thing that you have to really cross your fingers about, if you're Adam Silver, if you're Masai Ujiri, if you're anybody who wants to see this thing go off, is will they obey the quarantine? Will they obey the bubble? Because it's not jail, Hayes. Like, you can't lock these guys inside,
right? No, you
can't.
And
the idea that they're going to be able to sit in there amongst themselves for months at a time, and I know there have been some provisions for family to come in and out, but, you know, the idea that these guys who can generally do whatever the heck they want are going to do whatever the heck the NBA says all of a sudden just for this, you know, it's a bit far-fetched to me. And that's where I think if you're Gary Bettman, you're feeling like, hey, if these athletes break our quarantine, if they break our protocol in Toronto or Edmonton, no big deal, because the odds of, you know, contracting COVID walking down the street in Toronto or going to a bar in Toronto are a lot lower than they are in Orlando, Florida, or any part of Florida for that matter.
Yeah, I definitely think there has to be some concern there. I think Damian Lillard expressed that earlier today or yesterday. He said, I'm not necessarily that confident that my guys are going to follow the rules.
No.
I mean, we don't follow the rules at normal times. You know, now you're going to put us in a bubble for 2 months. You think everyone's just going to continue to follow the rules?
Exactly.
I
got news for you, Hayes. I mean, there's a reason I've seen NBA players that own as many as 4 iPhones. It ain't because they're tech enthusiasts,
no,
if you know
exactly
what I'm saying. They've got multiple things going on, if you know what I'm saying.
When you have 3 bat lines, that's like Batman looks at you and goes, dude, that's too much. Like, what are you up to? How many different accounts do you have going? What is your DM look like right now? I think that's a legitimate concern. I mean, and I'm sure it is within the NBA environment. Like, how are we going to make sure that these players are comfortable, safe? But also, I mean, you, like you said, you can't demand that someone sits in their room all day.
No,
like that's not going to happen. They put in place a rule, and I'll be quite intrigued to see if they follow through on it. If it doesn't get out and doesn't get reported, that if you leave the bubble, that's fine. But if you want to come back, you've got to quarantine.
Right.
Well, again, what if it's LeBron in between game 3 and 4 of the NBA Finals? He gets spotted at a 7-Eleven down the road.
Right.
I don't think he's missing the rest of the finals. I'll believe that when I see it. But that said, I think LeBron is one of the few guys who are probably going to lock in and realize, I got to take advantage. It's the guy who's 22, 23, the 10th man on the roster on a team that's probably not going to win.
Yes.
Right? That's the guy you're like, really? You think he's going to sit there for a month and a half and not go anywhere?
Well, hey, man, we just watched The Last Dance, right? And what was Michael Jordan famous for? He needed to get away. Like he'd go to Atlantic City and go gambling on the night before a game in the playoffs. And he'd go play 36 holes of golf on the night before, day of a game, for that matter, because he needed to get away. He needed to leave that bubble in which he existed, right?
Yep.
So it's human nature for a lot of these guys to be able to get away whenever they feel like it and do whatever the heck they want to do. I don't think you're going to be able to just kind of break that from them. You know, you just can't crush that out of these guys and say, guys, for the good of the sport, for the good of your franchise. That's not how these guys think, most of them. I agree. There'll be guys who buy right in, and there are guys who are on a mission here, and maybe LeBron's one of them. If I'm looking at the Raptors, I see a lot of guys who have that mission mentality. And if I'm Masai Ujiri, I probably feel fairly good about the way my guys are viewing this trip to Florida. Although the Raptors have got the added, you know, aspect of being in quarantine for a couple of weeks before they go to Orlando because they're in Fort Myers right now.
Which can break both ways.
Which could.
One way they're like, okay, we're used to it and we know what's up and we know how this is going to work. And I'm sure they've had a scare or two, over the few days they've been down there, hearing stories about what's coming and what's going. But on the flip side, you know, if we're going to have the belief that at some point these guys are going to crack because they're human – and they're like, I don't really just want to be sitting here and doing nothing in my hotel room. They're even ahead of that curve.
Yes.
Of boredom or a lack of freedom.
Right.
And I know DeMar DeRozan came out and spoke about that recently. He said it's overwhelming. Like, it's a lot, these rules. Now, DeMar's on a team that probably shouldn't even be there.
Yes.
And he knows he's going, and they're going to play 8 games, and they're going home. You know, like, I've seen this. Zion Williamson is trending today because Zion, as a professional athlete, is actually in shape, which is – those stories always make me laugh. It's like, really, we're gonna applaud some guy for being in shape when
exactly.
He's a pro athlete?
Yes.
But he is, so good for him. He looks carved. He looks like he's ready to go. They're, what are they, 3.5 back?
Yeah.
They're not making it.
No.
Like, they're not going to get in. So it's not going to happen. These guys are not going to show up and run off 8 in a row and dominate these teams that are on the outside looking in. It's ridiculous that Washington's there. It's ridiculous that San Antonio's there. It's all about the money. It's all about, I guess, trying to get as many games in as possible
exactly.
with your local broadcast so that you don't have to strike a check. And the NHL's doing the same thing.
No, they talked about
the play-in round.
No, totally. Like, they talked about how adding these extra teams, instead of going just 16 and just starting the playoffs, you know, as soon as you got to Orlando, like a lot of people felt they should have done, and I sort of feel that way too. Maybe you need a run-up. Maybe you need some kind of a preseason type of pre-playoff warm-up game or two, but I don't think you need 8 games apiece. But those 8 games apiece that they're playing with the 22 teams, say, it's worth hundreds of millions. I heard something like $300-plus million extra added to the revenue they're going to get out of this thing, and don't make a mistake. That's exactly what this thing is all about.
That's huge money. That's $10 million a team right there, right? And if you split that in two, that's $5 million for each team in terms of the players.
Right.
And in terms of the owners, if it's a 50-50 toss-up or you know, basketball-related revenue, if you want to look at it that way. There's a lot on the line. It is about economics. They're going to do everything they can to be safe. I think once they're in that bubble, again, I think they'll be more safe there than they would be anywhere else in the state. And I think even with our own mentality up here with the NHL, it appears as if it's coming here. It's going to be in Toronto and in Edmonton. Once these teams get here and they test, and if they all test negative, then they're just citizens in the city. They're going to be high-profile guys.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not expecting them to run rampant. I'm not expecting some big outbreak because the NHL teams are in Toronto or in Edmonton. They're going to be isolated. They're going to be going back and forth between the hotel and the rink. They might get out, like we just said, just like the NBA players, the NHL players will do the same thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not expecting them to be the cause of the second wave of COVID up here.
No, you know, the NHL plan makes a lot of sense to me. You know, like it seems reasonable to me why you would allow the NHL to send 11 teams plus the Leafs to the bubble, the hub in Toronto, and likewise 12 teams to Edmonton, because, you know, they've got a plan. They've got this quarantine plan, the quarantine cohorts, as they're calling it, where you, as long as you're with your team and you're going to the rink and you're going home and you're obeying that, you know, they'll allow that to be considered your 14 days when you arrive in Canada for the guys who aren't from Canada. That, to me, doesn't offend me. What offends me, Hayes, and I think I don't like to know how you feel about it, what offends me is the idea you're just going to allow these Major League Baseball teams to go in and out of the country. I mean, I'm not sure how that is plausible, and I have no idea how they believe that could ever work.
Yeah, having teams hop this border. It is apples and oranges. Yeah. Like, again, once these NHL teams get up here, then they are citizens of Toronto.
Exactly.
Like, basically, they're here for 2 months. They're not coming and going. They're going to be on a regimented schedule. They're going to be tested more than the average Torontonian. In fact, much more. They're going to be tested almost daily.
Yeah.
I don't get that. You don't get that.
No.
So we are going to know exactly what's going on with the NHL players. In terms of baseball, you're right. I mean, teams flying up from New York, from Florida, from Philly, from Miami, wherever it happens to be, it appears as if that's where it's going. And I just saw our buddy Scott Mitchell reporting that or tweeting out that word is Mark Shapiro will be on a conference call in the next couple of hours to confirm the Blue Jays will be hosting their spring training in Toronto, which I think we've known that's coming for a while. That is not confirmation that they will be hosting actual games in Toronto, but that's maybe a precursor to it. But they're coming up. Like they're probably on the bird right now. Wouldn't shock me if they're on their way here or if they've even landed, some of them. I think Bob Elliott was tweeting about that earlier today, that like Bichette and Vladdy, a couple of the big boys, were on the first plane and it's already coming.
Right.
So they're going to be here, and they're going to be here for spring training for the next two and a half weeks. And I feel like if they're willing to make that exception, then the Jays likely know they're also going to be hosting games here.
See, because... to me, it's a leap, though. To me, that's not the same thing, right? If you've got one team that happens to be, you know, called this home. This is their home park, and this is where they are employed during the summertime. And they're coming here together for a two-week period that satisfies your 14-day quarantine, and they're going to adhere to the quarantine rules within, you know, the parameters of staying in the hotel that's attached to the dome and then training at the dome. That's fine with me. Like that to me, it sounds more like the NHL plan. But this idea that there's, you know, that's the same thing as the New York Yankees or the Florida Marlins saying, we're hopping a plane and going to Toronto for 3 days and then leaving. I mean, I don't get how those two things are the same thing, because they're not, clearly.
No, they're not. They're totally different.
And they violate, you know, the Federal Quarantine Act, by the way. And I'm not sure I would be giving. In fact, I know for sure I would not be giving exceptions to Major League Baseball teams, especially teams based in states where COVID is absolutely spiking.
Well, I don't see how baseball is going to pull this off. Like,
no.
There's trepidation in terms of the bubble in Orlando, which, again, I don't share as much as maybe the average person does. I think the NBA, once they're in there, anyone that's been to Disney, it is a world in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they're in there and they're negative, I don't think it's not just going to be airborne, you know, like a cloud that all of a sudden leaks into the NBA community in there. Might there be some seepage if guys break the rules? Maybe some employees that come and go that could contract it and bring it in. That is certainly possible. But I think it's highly plausible that they're going to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, I agree.
The fact that 30 teams in Major League Baseball are all playing in 30 different markets and coming and going is a totally different beast.
Absolutely.
A totally different story that, again, I don't believe is going to work the way that they hope it will be. There will be way more positive tests, I believe, in baseball and eventually in football if it gets to that point come the fall. I'm with you in terms of the way I would think maybe the federal government would approach that. What I'm saying is, I think usually these teams have a pretty good read on what's coming.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're even up here, and they're on their way up here anyway, according to reports, would indicate they know that they're also going to be staying here. Because I think if they were told, hey, you know, if you want to come up, go ahead, but don't even think about it. You're going right back down to Dunedin. I would have suggested it'd be better for them just to get down there and get used to it.
Yeah.
Like if you're playing in Dunedin, what's the point of coming home for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And then going back down in 2 weeks?
Good point.
So I'm just reading the tea leaves. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I would suggest that if they got the go-ahead to come back for spring training 2.0, I'll bet you it's not too far around the corner them getting the green light to host games. And that's where if you could find a way to work out and manipulate the schedule, then maybe you get the Yankees coming in, and if they're supposed to play two series in Toronto, they play six games here
right.
in a row as opposed to three, and then we'll be back in 3 weeks to wrap up the final series. But I don't think baseball is going to work with them like that. And I think the Jays probably know it. Canadian government likely knows it as well. But we'll keep you updated on that in terms of what Shapiro and the Jays can tell us about spring training, being back in Toronto, or I guess in Toronto for the first time ever, and where they end up going with the rest of their season. Ryan Callahan will join us, longtime NHLer, longtime Ranger, Tampa Bay Lightning, NHL Network analyst. We'll get into the reports over the past couple of days from Bob McKenzie about where the NHL is taking this, how we feel about it. The Olympics appear to be in play, and Ryan played in a couple of those, so we're looking forward to that. With Dave Feschuk from the Toronto Star and Brian Hayes, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, the 4 p.m. hour brought to you by LeaseBusters. They'll rescue you from your car lease. LeaseBusters, heroic, maybe helpful, totally. People would love to take over your car lease for your lease relief. Go to LeaseBusters.com. Ryan Callahan will join us here in a moment. Two-time Olympian with Team USA back in 2010 and 2014. And it appears as if the Olympics are coming back into focus for NHL players, Dave, with the most recent CBA negotiations. That would indicate to me the players felt like they had a lot of leverage. The league felt like they didn't, or the league felt like they had to throw a bone to the players to make sure that they come back and play this summer. And the players appear to have locked that in. So sounds like they'll be in China in 2022 and in Italy in 2026. Not ideal in terms of time zones for North American hockey fans, but the players want to be there. And I'm glad it's going to happen, because I think international hockey is sorely lacking, and it's a huge part of the history of our country and huge part of the history of the country or of the sport. And as I've said many times, I feel for younger players, guys like McDavid and Matthews, who haven't had that opportunity to have their big moments,
yeah,
like all the other great players have throughout history.
Totally, like I'm with you. This is huge. I'm not sure the players had leverage, Hayes. Like, I think this is sort of like the owners throwing them a bone at a moment they crush them. Because, let's be honest here, this CBA negotiation did not go well for the players. Outside of the Olympic participation, which we all know has meant a lot to players, and they were upset about that they didn't get the chance to go to Pyeongchang in 2018, man, this was not a good moment for the Players Association in negotiations, obviously. Like, they're taking a 30% pay cut next year, Hayes. It hasn't been good. The owners are not absorbing the losses. The players are absorbing the losses due to COVID under this agreement. So pending approval, of course, because the players still have to vote on it. But I'm with you, man. Like, the idea that we would have had to go through a generation where Connor McDavid didn't get to play in the Olympics in his prime, where he wouldn't have got the chance to play in the Olympics with Sidney Crosby, who's now, don't forget, 32 years old, 33 next month. Not exactly a spring chicken. Now, Sid may be the guy that plays until he's 40-something, a la Gordie Howe playing at a high level. We don't know, but we won't
see. Yeah,
I think
Sid's probably a lock for the 2022 team anyway.
Yes.
I mean, in 2026, maybe that's a different conversation, but it wouldn't shock me if he was still playing and still rolling.
Totally.
Let's bring in two-time Olympian, longtime NHLer, analyst with the NHL Network. Here's Ryan Callahan. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
We're doing pretty well, man. We're just talking about how it feels like the Olympics is going to be back into the picture here, and the NHL players will be going in 2022 and 2026. And as you look back on your career, you know, how cool was that for you? Just being selected, playing, being a part of a national team at the highest level you could possibly play.
Yeah, I mean, it was really unbelievable. You know, as I look back on my career, I honestly think that, you know, especially those Olympics in Vancouver in 2010 there, that was probably the highlight of my career, of best 2 weeks of most fun, other than maybe outside the Stanley Cup Finals, I played in that I had throughout my career. Just to be able to represent your country, put on your country's colors. It's such a big stage like the Olympics with all the other sports going on. There's so much pride in your country. You know, when last year when the players didn't get to go to the Olympics, I thought it was a real shame. I mean, I know how much I cherished it, how much I enjoyed the two that I was there. And then, you know, I heard you guys talking there, a guy like McDavid, you know, and guy who's so talented like that, you know, not to get that opportunity, you know, to represent his country on that stage and everybody else, the young guys that didn't get to experience it, that are so talented, that deserve that. You know, it looks like they're going to be going now, and I'm extremely happy for the players. It's quite an experience, and I'm really lucky that I got a chance to play in two of them.
Well, Ryan, I mean, when you look at the Olympics in 2022, I mean, you know, in Canada, this is the type of country where the minute it was announced that the Olympics is going to be a part of the international calendar, people start putting their teams together already, right? Like, it's that hotly anticipated. But if I'm in the States right now, and I'm part of that hardcore hockey community in the States, I'm feeling pretty good about my team for 2022, led by none other than Austin Matthews of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, the amount of talent that, you know, young American players right now is through the roof. So, you know, it's usually Canada's always up there, and they always will be. But, you know, I'm very excited to see what this American team is. And it's not going to be an easy team to pick with the amount of talent coming out of the U.S. and young guys, too. I mean, that's what the most impressive part about it. It's a core of young players that, you know, have a chance to play in this Olympics together. And then, who knows, 4 years from then, you know, it's going to be the same group of guys, more experience. So it's going to be a real treat.
Yeah, when I think of the American team, the poster boy for me is Patrick Kane right now, just based on his history. He's an all-time great player. I think when all is said and done, he'll be considered the greatest American player ever. But is Matthews kind of moving up that list? Where would Austin rank for you in terms of, you know, when you think of American hockey players right now and guys that'll be the quote-unquote face of that Olympic team, where would Austin Matthews slot in?
I mean, he's up there one, two, three. I think you nailed it on the head with Patrick Kane. You know, it was going down probably as the greatest American to play. I completely agree with that. And but, yeah, I mean, Matthews is right there as well, and he continues the career that he's having and keeps going on this path. I think he's going to be, you know, with Kane right there in that conversation. But as for the Olympics, yeah, I mean, he's top one, two, three. You got a guy like Eichel too, who's up there, very talented player. So it's going to be an exciting time, and it's going to be some good hockey. It always is at the Olympics, and I'm excited now just to watch it as a fan.
So what's your excitement level, Ryan, to see this hub city model unfold? And what are you hearing, you know, from guys you've played with, from guys who will be going to one of the two hub cities, about their level of excitement versus their level of maybe a little bit of wariness of the situation?
Yeah, I think the players I've talked to, everybody's excited. I mean, everybody's excited to get a chance to play for the Stanley Cup, to get back to playing hockey. But with that, there's also a huge level of concern, and it's just the unknown, I think. You know, you can put all the plans together and have the formats you want, but there's still that unknown because you haven't done it yet. What happens if one guy gets infected or two guys get infected? You know, how do you go from there? So there's a lot of guys that are going to be leaving their families for a long time, too. I can appreciate that, having three young ones of my own. That is not going to be easy at all if you're gone from your family from, you know, 2 to 3 months, depending on how far you go. That's not going to be easy. And also, you know, for better lack of it, you're going to be stuck in a hotel room for quite a while and not going to be able to go out. You know, so it's going to be a big adjustment for a lot of these guys. And I think a lot of guys realize that. But at the same time, there's that excitement of getting back and doing what you love. And, you know, I think what everybody plays for, a chance of winning a Stanley Cup.
We're chatting with Ryan Callahan, longtime NHLer, two-time Olympian, and currently an NHL Network analyst. The asterisk talk has been out there, you know, for the past few months as we've thrown around different ideas, different potential models for a return to play. This is unique. It's different. That's the era we're living in. It's 2020, man. It's thrown a curveball to everybody. But once we get through this, if you can look to the future, we get to, you know, mid-October and a cup has been handed out, Do you picture the emotion to be just as high as it always would be if you were on that team, if you win that Stanley Cup? You think any of those guys are going to be listening to any of the asterisk talk or anything like that?
I don't think they'll be listening to any of it. I mean, without knowing, I definitely think there's going to be a little bit different feeling, though. I mean, you're going to have no fans in the crowd. You come back home to your home city, there probably is not going to be a parade.
Right.
You're going to have when you go to the stadium and the stadium's full and you're on stage with a cup and, you go out and you party with the cup and everything else. I mean, you're not going to have any of that either. So definitely going to be a little bit different emotions, I'm sure. The atmosphere is going to be completely different. But, I mean, at the end of the day, as a little kid, you're dreaming to win a Stanley Cup, and this doesn't change it. Your name still goes on that cup. You still get a ring. These playoffs might be a little bit harder than any other playoffs to win. I know people are saying, an asterisk next to it, but, I mean, you're going into a two-week training camp, playing a couple round-robin games for the top teams for seeding, the other guys to get in. So you got to win some games to even get into the playoffs, and then you're going through, the Stanley Cup playoffs, what I consider the hardest playoffs in all sports. So you're doing that off of just a two-week training camp. So this might be the toughest one of all to actually lift it and win.
So I don't want to bring up a bad memory, Ryan, but you were part of the Tampa Bay Lightning team, obviously a season ago that had a tough moment and showed how tough it is to win the Stanley Cup when you got bounced in the first round by the Columbus Blue Jackets in a huge upset. The Leafs, of course, about to play the Blue Jackets in this 3-of-5 play-in round, I guess they're calling it. Break that team down. Break down the Columbus Blue Jackets. I know they've changed quite a bit since you played them last spring, but what will the Leafs be looking at, and how difficult will it be to get past this John Tortorella coach club?
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there when you said John Tortorella coach club. They take on Torts' identity, and that's what we experienced last year in the playoffs. He had a good game plan for them coming at us. They all work hard. They're gonna block shots. They're gonna be tough to get through. There's gonna be no easy areas around the ice. Everybody's gonna play in the defensive zone. He has that identity to his teams. I remember when I played for him in New York, we overachieved a lot of those teams that we had there, going to a conference final one year, having some successful years under him with personnel on the team. Maybe we probably shouldn't have done that, but we did because we took on his identity and everybody bought in. And that's exactly what we ran into last year in Tampa. I think it all started with that game one, giving up a third period lead there, a two-goal lead going into the third. We give up and we give that team a little bit of life and a little bit of belief. And with that, they ran with it. So for Toronto, I mean, that's what they're going to be facing. I mean, they're going to be well-coached. There's going to be no easy parts of that ice. And especially come playoff time, that ice gets even a little bit smaller, as you guys know. And a very similar team to us is, we were, I feel like Tampa and Toronto are very similar teams and in high skill, high speed. So I think they're going to be in tough. I mean, I went through it and I played them in the playoffs and I realized how hard it was. Obviously their personnel has changed a little bit, which I think, helps Toronto. They lost some guys there and Bobrovsky obviously was big for them. Panarin obviously was huge for them, last year, but yeah, I mean, the one thing Toronto, I think, will learn from us is you can't look past them because it's a very well-coached team and everybody's on the same page from the first line to the fourth. And when you play a team like that in the playoffs, it's a tough out.
Always great catching up with you, Ryan. All the best. We'll do this again down the road. Thank you for this.
Awesome, guys. Stay healthy, and we'll see you soon.
You got it. Ryan Callahan, longtime NHLer. Played with John Tortorella, was a captain down there with the Rangers. So knows Tortorella well, and obviously, played really well with him behind the bench. And I was thinking about it over the weekend that it's going to be a race to find your form, but also find your intensity.
Yeah.
Right? Like in all these sports, but definitely in the NHL, because there isn't going to be a buildup. Like in baseball, there's a 60-game buildup. You can't stub your toe out of the gate or you might miss, but you're allowed some wiggle room. The NBA, they're basically feeding you 8 games. For the big boys, the 8 games don't really matter that much. There's some seeding, and if you're the Raptors, you want to finish in the 2 seed. You don't want to throw it away and let Boston catch you. But if you lose the first 2 games, you're not panicking. Right. You're like, all right, we still got 6. We got to win like 3 of these, and we hold on to our spot. We're fine. The NHL is not going to have that luxury. So whichever teams can get locked in and find their intensity, find some sort of emotional trigger, is going to be hugely beneficial. And prove you're mature enough to find it. And that's my concern with this Leaf team and my concern with this battle between the Leafs and the Blue Jackets. Based on talent, Toronto's a better team. But all year, we saw a lot of evidence that would suggest they had a difficult time coming alive. And
yeah,
they better find it and find it quick, because if you go down 2-0 in this series, you're probably done.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, you're probably done.
Well, exactly. There's so much that is hard to know, Hayes, but you're right. Like, who can really ramp it up quickly is the question. And if I'm kind of handicapping the coaches, it's like, who's the guy you would trust to ramp up a team in short order? I'd have a hard time finding a guy, yeah, better than Tortorella, right?
Yeah.
Like, Tortorella's a proven guy in terms of being able to find that next gear for his team. As Ryan Callahan said in that great interview, you know, this is a guy who's been able to take clubs that maybe shouldn't be doing what they're doing and get them to overachieve. And, you know, we saw it last year with Columbus beating Tampa. You know, Callahan talked about that Rangers club that got to a conference final when it probably didn't have the sort of talent that suggested it should get there. And that's on Tortorella. So you wonder how the Leafs will approach that, right? Will it be Sheldon Keefe maybe turning over a new leaf and showing a different gear that we haven't seen from him? He's talked about how he's really examining everything and he's really looking at changing things. But man, you're right. This is going to be intriguing stuff. Who can make it happen in a 3 of 5? Will Freddie Anderson be a slow starter again? Because if he is, they could be dead. Man, there's so many unanswered questions. But that is, when you can get past all the rest of the stuff and just start talking hockey, it's a lot of fun to think about.
Oh, it's great. Exactly. I'm all for it. You know, I love it. And but that's the intangible factors of the sport, and especially playoff hockey. You know, playoff hockey is a completely different beast. And it's not how, it's how many, and intensity ramps up in conventional playoff rounds. This, I don't know if it's going to. You know, I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what it'll feel like in that building without any fans and stepping out there and playing competitive hockey for the first time in 4 months. But I am fairly certain that if there's a team out there that decides we actually are going to play with the same intensity as if there were 20,000 hooligans in this building and as if we did just wrap up the regular season 5 days ago, that team's going to have a huge boost.
Totally.
And a huge leg up. And if I'm looking at these two teams based on the coach and what you just said, I would say Columbus has a better opportunity of that happening. And I hope the Leafs prove me wrong.
When you think back, Larry, I remember did an interview with Brendan Shanahan right at the beginning of the COVID shutdown. And he talked about how, you know, one of the questions that he wanted answered about his team was, why do we, I should say this. He said, I was happy with the fact we played well when we had our backs against the wall, is how he phrased it, to sort of go back. And then he said, but the question I had was, why do we always insist on getting our backs against
exactly.
the wall? Like, why do we dig ourselves holes and then dramatically jump out of them, you know? Why don't we just kind of do it right from the start? And to your point, Hayes, there's no room to dig a hole here. Like, yeah, 0-2, yeah, you go down 0-2 in a 3 of 5, yeah, you could win 3 in a row, but good luck, right? Because then one bad game from Freddie or one bad break in one game, you know how hockey can be. You know,
yeah.
You don't want to get down in an 0-2 hole. And this team, if it has that characteristic, it's, well, you know, we still got time. We can flip the switch. That's been the narrative of this team for 3 years, Hayes. It really has.
Yeah, it has been. They're overly confident. Even though the evidence would suggest they don't really deserve that confidence in the biggest moments.
Yeah.
And particularly in the playoffs. You can love this team all you want. They've won a playoff round.
Exactly.
So they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt. They have to go out there and prove that they're worthy of a different reputation. And if we're lucky and it feels like we're trending that way, we're going to find out in less than a month.
Yeah.
Or just over a month.
Let's hope.
Yeah, let's hope. Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, in about 20 minutes. We'll get back into some of the reports out there about what's coming out of this new CBA and the way the NHL may be operating in the next 2 or 3 years and why, again, it's not a great sign for the Leafs in terms of their cap situation and how they're hoping to build their team. We'll get to that at 5. But Hal Steinbrenner with a comment out of New York that has been raising some eyebrows and potentially an NFL decision when it comes to fans in the stands. We'll tell you about that next. All right, the 4 p.m. hour brought to you by Lease Busters. Lease Busters will get you out of your car lease today. It's as easy as pie, a piece of cake. Avoid penalties and early termination fees. Visit leasebusters.com. Bob McKenzie in about 15 minutes. Brian Hayes, Dave Festrek from The Star. I think you're there, right, Dave?
I'm here.
Okay, I just got to make sure I confirm that every second.
Check,
now.
Check, check. One,
check,
two,
check,
one,
check.
Two.
Yeah, we had some mic issues out of the gate at 4 p.m., and I was truly on an island because I'm in an office in my house, and I didn't even know if I was on the air.
Really?
Like, I had to ask Steve, our board op. I'm like, am I on, or is it my end that's the issue here? So should I keep talking, or how's this thing going to work? It was kind of one of those moments, like I felt like a grandparent trying to FaceTime with their grandson or daughter, and the camera's turned upside down, and it's like, is this working or not working? But it's all good. And Bob McKenzie, again, will join us in 15 minutes. So Hal Steinbrenner, who owns the Yankees, I guess was doing an interview on Yes Network, and he seemed to indicate that the Yankees and Ticketmaster are working on some scheme that would allow for upwards of 20 to 30% capacity at home games at Yankee Stadium to begin the season.
Yeah.
So like in 3 weeks, the epicenter of COVID in the Western Hemisphere is going to be hosting baseball games. Does that seem possible to you, Dave?
It seems highly unlikely to me. I mean, how would you enforce this? I mean, the idea that we're going to have this map made out of, you know, made up by Ticketmaster that will keep all the fans 6 feet from each other and thereby, you know, satisfy the health inspector. I mean, sure, you can have a seat that's 6 feet away from somebody else, but how do you enforce the idea that, you know, the fans aren't going to actually move away from their seats and come too close together? And it would totally defeat the purpose of social distancing, obviously, and it just seems far-fetched for me, Hayes.
Yeah, it does, although I will say I'm a little bit surprised that they're even playing in New York. So
yeah.
If you told me a month ago that the Yankees and the Mets would be playing home games at all, with or without fans in New York, I'd say you're crazy. So things are changing pretty quickly. And I do find that in the States, you know, they're willing to open up. They're willing to push the limits a little bit more than we are. And in some areas, it's come back to burn them, as we know, like California and Florida and Texas, where they're starting to they're going backwards.
Oh,
you know, they're starting to lock up again. New York, though, obviously feels like they are through, you know, the thick of it, and they're moving in a much better direction. Because the first thing I thought of was Cuomo, like the governor. I'm like, you got to get clearance from the governor, and then de Blasio, the mayor of New York. Like, there's going to have to be some bureaucracy here, and there's going to be some red tape. Someone's got to cut it, and I don't think the Steinbrenners can be the ones that do it. So I would guess he's not just popping off.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he's been told this could be doable if you actually work out a plan where the seats are nowhere close to 6 feet. Maybe they got to be upwards of 8 feet apart. Anyone that's in there's got to be wearing a mask.
Yeah.
No concession stands. Because I would say if it's an open-air stadium, it's not that much different than patios being open.
No, I completely agree. I completely agree with you there. Baseball, that's why I thought baseball would be playing by now, for that very reason, right? The idea that, you know, transmission outdoors is so much lower than transmission indoors. It seemed like it was the natural to come back first rather than the arena sports, where clearly being indoors in big groups did not seem like it was going to be in the cards anytime soon. So
right.
I agree with you on that totally. And I guess that's the thing we're finding out about this thing, is it's state by state, health department by health department. Because, you know, I was just on the phone with a buddy of mine who was down. He's got a place in Florida, and he's got a place in Colorado. He said it's amazing how in Colorado, for some reason, you can't really put his finger on where, everybody wears masks when they go to the grocery store. Everybody complies. Everybody's very respectful. And they're doing quite well, you know, relative to the national average in Colorado. Florida, totally different thing, right? Florida's a place where nobody wants to wear a mask. They think it's a political statement to wear a mask. Like, you're a Democrat if you wear a mask, and you're a Republican if you don't, or some such. And therefore, they're spiking daily. They just set a new record today with 10,000 plus cases. So, you know, what's going on in New York? Obviously, there's better compliance there, clearly, than there has been at the start when they were the epicenter of it, as you said. But man, this is a moving target, right? And I think
yeah.
The bottom line is, the idea that baseball stadiums would be open without concession stands, that baseball stadiums would be open with one-third or one-quarter
fans. Why would you even want to be there?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Why would you want to go?
I'm not sure. But maybe for the novelty of it, maybe because we haven't had anything to do for 4 months and it actually would be something to do.
Yeah.
Get you out of your house.
That's true.
And I would suggest it would likely be a domino effect. If New York's going to put it in place, I'll bet you a bunch of different places will. And eventually it'll get back to our doorstep. And we'll be asking questions. Well, we'll be allowed to go to see games at the Rogers Center.
Yeah.
And
well, you know, Hayes, like that's one thing that came out. I remember having this discussion in the middle of the talks, right? In the middle of all the labor war between the owners and the players in baseball. You know, somebody said, well, the reason they're pointing toward playing in the home parks is very clear, right? They're hoping they get crowds in there
exactly.
very shortly, right?
That's what they want.
They didn't. There's a reason why they didn't want to play in their spring training hub, right? Like they were talking about that Arizona hub for the longest time or the Florida hub for the
longest time.
But there's a reason why they didn't go that way, and it's revenue, and it's the idea that by the end of the season, they'll be able to pack them in.
And that's what the NFL is obviously hoping on as well. They've got a lot of outdoor stadiums. In fact, I think almost all of them are. So we'll get to that. We'll tell you what the NFL might be looking into in terms of trying to get fans into the stands and what you might have to do to be allowed to get into the stands. We'll tell you about that into the 5 p.m. hour. Bob McKenzie coming up, our Hockey Insider. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.